Hi, I'm Clemmie Telford and it's time to get open and get honest. Each week, I interview a guest about a topic that we, as a society, often shy away from. From sex lives to salaries, life and death, religion and real bodies, no subject is off the table. Welcome to Honestly, the podcast. Shoes are my absolute weakness. They make or break an outfit. This season's range from M&S is pretty dreamy. There's some great boots and some loafers that I've got my eye on. And if you're a heels wearer, then there's some platforms that would make a great investment too. I'm genuinely thrilled to be partnering with Marks & Spencer on this podcast. Not only are they supporting this podcast, they're indulging my very real shoe obsession too. Today I am joined by award-winning journalist, ex-editor of Huffington Post, stylist, rising star of 2019. She is Pawna Bell. Hello.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thank you. So the title of this podcast is Honestly, so it's all about being honest. And to get you in the mood, I like to start with a quick fire round.
Okay.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how cool are you?
Oh, I would say a 4.
Oh. On a scale of 1 to 10, how nice are you?
I would say a 7.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how strong are you?
Mentally or physically?
Both. As you feel fit?
8.
Or both?
I would say 8.
Okay. Yeah. Night owl or early bird?
Early bird.
Introvert or extrovert?
I sit between both. I can't remember what the word is, but I definitely am neither, as in I'm not an introvert and I'm not an extrovert.
That's probably quite a great place to be, isn't it?
Yeah. It makes it awkward though, because people assume I'm an extrovert. And then when I want to leave things early, or I like to avoid things with too many people in it,
they can't understand it.
Yeah, they're like, oh, but why? I thought you liked parties. It's like, no.
I wonder many true extroverts there are though.
I think that they are probably rarer.
I think
there are more
introverts. Yeah. A load of people, not fronting, but pushing themselves out of their comfort zone.
Yeah.
Dog or cat person?
Dog.
Yes. What star sign are you?
Sagittarius.
Are you? Are you? I've got a Saggy sun.
I feel like this is just leading up to some terrible conclusion. Okay.
No, Saggy's are good.
Yeah.
When did you last cry?
Ooh, I think 3 days ago.
Fair enough. When did you last weigh yourself?
I last weighed myself 2 weeks ago.
When did you last go to the dentist?
I think last year.
It's all right. I've had worse answers than that. It's very telling though, isn't it? And I think it's a bit of self-care that none of us managed to achieve. It's not that much of an enjoyable experience.
Well, I have been meaning to make an appointment, but for superficial reasons, I'm afraid to check whether my teeth are in a good enough state to get them whitened.
Are you going to do it?
Yeah, totally.
Have you ever wet yourself as an adult? Didn't see that coming.
Listen, I'd like to caveat this with yes, but it was when I did my final deadlift at the first ever powerlifting competition
that
I did.
On your pelvis,
which
well.
Is, yeah, it's, and at the time I was mortified and I thought, oh my God, this is it. You know, the tide is turning, my body is crumbling, and apparently it's totally normal and it can happen to you at any age.
Well, interestingly, I went to a conference last week with the Gynae Geek, if anyone follows her, and she was saying that she works a lot with the fitness community and it is very, very common.
Yeah.
How did you do in your GCSEs and has it impacted your life?
I actually did a lot better in my GCSEs than I thought, because I knew I would be great at the arts. So let's say art, history, English. But I thought that my grades in science, because I'm terrible at science and maths, I actually was genuinely surprised that I got the grades that I did. And I thought, oh, maybe I'm not as stupid as I thought I was.
I mean, that's quite unusual, isn't it? To surpass your own expectation. And three words your friends would use to describe you.
Loud. Loud, loyal, hopefully kind. Oh, and funny. Oh, no, that's four. Oh.
Whether you believe in star signs or not, you basically described a typical Sagittarius.
Oh. Such a stereotype.
Yeah, but that's good. They're good things. They're good things to be. The reason I've got you here is to talk about strength, which is kind of one of the more abstract titles for these podcasts. But strength felt very apt for you in every sense of the word.
Thank you.
Obviously, we're going to be looking very much at life post In Search of Silence. But could you, give us a bit of context about what brings you here?
So it's funny you say that about it not being a common topic, and it's something that I realised. I thought it was quite niche as a topic until I started writing about it. But more importantly, not writing about it in this very narrow, this is what I think strength is, it's physical fitness, blah, blah, blah. But actually how it interlinks with so many other aspects of your life. And I think that that resonates with a lot of people, particularly women, who may look at the idea of strength, and it doesn't necessarily need to be weightlifting, as something that is just not for us. It's not for you. It's this foreign concept. You know, I only recently found out that some boys' schools have weightlifting sections, which we definitely didn't have in my school.
Well, that is a problem, isn't it? It's like, if you don't like netball, you're not sporty.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. And so you're given this very narrow idea of what someone who is good at being physically fit is. And if you're kind of not great at it, or if you're, let's say, mediocre at it, you're not encouraged in any way to explore what's within your means. And so I had a very on and off relationship with fitness. And I would definitely say in my 20s, I just viewed it as, you know, this thing that I would go to the gym, maybe potter around on a few machines, and then kind of go home. And then I think in my mid-30s, I experienced a huge, huge life event, which was my husband passed away. And this was in 2015. And he was very much this 6'2", really broad-shouldered Kiwi guy. And when it came to anything to do with, you know, physical labor, or we would move house, or just anything that involved lifting things or moving things around, that was always his domain.
Yeah, but that's because that's the default, isn't it?
It was the default. I was very happy to let him do it. I would ask him to do various chores. Also, I couldn't do it. So, you know, he would just kind of slot into that position, which is really weird, because my dad used to be a bodybuilder and a weightlifter. So
you were brought up.
So I was brought up, but it was like, oh, that's for men. He's a man. So
that's why you. Yeah, absolutely. To give some context, we referenced in the beginning, but you are now. Yeah, you've started lifting, and now have got to a point where you do compete.
Like, yes, which is something that if you had told me this. I mean, God, I would say 4 or 5 years ago, but if you told me this last year, I would have started laughing at you.
Did you know that when you took it up that you were doing it? I've read somewhere that you said you had relied on your husband to do the heavy lifting, and then you kind of had found yourself in the grief state taking this up. And was it as simple as, I need to be physically able, or were you doing it as an escapism?
I think after he passed away, to be honest, I did a lot of running. So I ran a lot. I lived by a river, and I would run a lot by that river. And I found that to be extremely calming, and just a place where I didn't have to think about anything, really. And if I wanted to kind of stop and have a cry, then I could kind of like take myself off to a bush and have a weep and then carry on. And that was fine. So I was still in the flat that we had lived in together. And I realized that I needed to move out of that flat. Like, it was not doing me any good. When I had last moved house, it was with him, and he had done all of the grunt work around it. And coinciding with this, it was just, you know, going away on a holiday and just needing help to get my suitcase up and down the stairs. And it just, it didn't happen overnight, but it coalesced into this thing where I realized that I would either have to ask whatever men were in my life to help me with this, which I really didn't want to do. But also, I just thought, I can't always, the one thing I think that all of this had taught me was, you can't rely on people to be around to help you all the time. It's great if they can, but I didn't want to be in that position, to be frank, ever again, where I felt like that. And it was all very tangled up in my grief and how I felt. What I decided I wanted to do was to just try a different type of exercise, but I had like no idea how to do it.
Yeah.
And the weight section, quite frankly, the free weight section, just terrifying.
Very hostile.
Yeah, super hostile.
Because you can't just like walk over there.
Yeah.
And it is, they're very traditionally very male dominated. Lifting is very technical. You do need to be
taught. It is. Yes, it absolutely is. So I hired a trainer to just, you know, I said, I'd like to get a bit stronger, but, you know, but not too bulky. Like, I don't want to get too bulky.
Do that.
So this carried on for a couple of years, and he showed me a few moves, and I started weightlifting, but it was still very much weightlifting to get strong, which I did get a lot stronger, but it was constricted because I didn't want to go past a certain point or have to eat more food to gain more muscle or to change how I was, yeah, because I felt that I wanted to get as strong as I possibly could, but remain as small as I possibly could, which is just, you know, there you plateau at that point, yeah, because there's only a certain amount you're able to do. But it did hugely change how I viewed weightlifting and how capable it made me feel. Yeah. And so during this kind of 2 or so years when I was just weightlifting at the gym and just trying to get a bit stronger, I think I got into a really weird place with food in terms of, I don't know what the right term is, but just being very mindful of what I was eating, you know, and trying to keep it, yeah, trying to keep it like low carb and not really eating.
Well, yeah, that's the question is like, when kind of healthy eating masquerades as.
Absolutely.
Disordered eating.
And I think when at that time, like this was when all of that stuff was really, really kicking off. And like, what was it called? Oh, clean eating. Yeah. There we go. Yeah. So there was, I remember like bone broth. And I think one point I texted my sister and I was like, listen, I think I need to get a dehydrator for my nuts. And she was like, Hold up. She was like, listen, let's just talk about what you just said.
Yeah, let's wind this back.
And I think that was definitely at a point where I was like, I think I might be taking this slightly
too far.
But also,
you're in a grief state and you're trying to hang your hat on anything, aren't
Absolutely.
You?
Like anything that gives you structural order.
Yeah, exactly. Like, in a time when like you've had the ultimate rug pull. Yeah. And so you've got it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a coping mechanism. I think it's really important as well to talk about lifting in relation to mental health. Because I was speaking to Joan from Frame, and she's like, well, how come you're so into it? And I just said, I love that blackness that comes. Like as you stand there trying to lift something, your brain cannot think about anything else, can it?
Yeah. I avoided or had this belief about weights that they were really boring, that they were this and they were that. And if you keep lifting the same weight over and over again, it is really boring. But if you incrementally increase your weights, it isn't boring because you can quantifiably see yourself getting stronger. Improving. And for me, with weightlifting, I find it very, the word I describe it as is meditative, because there is a rhythm to that repetition, which I don't think I get through any other activity. Yeah. For example, like running, it connects to a different place than weightlifting does. And there is that point where you will have this conversation in your head, right, of, oh, I don't know if I can lift it. Oh, my God, this is really heavy. And then you question all your life choices that have brought you to this point and why you've voluntarily decided to do this. But then you lift the weight. And when you lift that weight, like my brain just goes to a place of like white noise.
Yeah, if that's what I mean, that blackness. Is
yeah, it's just, it's serene and it is, honestly, it's just one of the most peaceful things I think that I can do. And then obviously you drop the weight and then you go through your next set and your next set of reps and so on. But I found that the gains that I have made in terms of weightlifting absolutely transfer into other areas, right? So I'm sure that you must have had this when you are wobbling about whether you can achieve something or not, or whether you have the confidence to go into something or not. I've found that more so than any other activity, confidence is, or self-confidence is, the biggest thing that weightlifting has given me. You are the only person that can get that weight up. Yeah. You cannot fool gravity around it. You and your body are the only thing that can literally pick or lower that thing to the ground. And so you're the only one that can put the work in and get it done. And when you realise that, or rather when I...
Such a metaphor for life though, isn't it?
You are the only person that can
and
get
you can
it
have
done.
Cheerleaders that definitely
Absolutely.
Help you lift it.
Yeah.
I also think there's a whole thing in the feminist issue of it as well. Of course, I think that. But you have to get really comfortable with the really weird, supposedly unfeminine noises that come out of your mouth.
For me, there is so much around feminism and weightlifting where I consider myself to be a feminist, but for so many years believed that my goal aesthetically should be slimness.
Yeah.
And when you kind of unravel all of that and you think, okay, so Guys don't ever worry about being bulky when they weightlift. So why am I worrying about being bulky? And then you unravel all of that. And there's no good reason. Like, there is absolutely no reason.
Oh, won't you get big?
Yeah.
Well, number one, it would take so much for me to get big.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And what if I did?
Yes, absolutely. So there's no distinction, no. Right? And when you kind of realise that, it's really hard to, for me anyway, I was like, I can't really be a feminist if I'm just going to clutch on to this completely pointless ideal that actually is all patriarchy and it's all about keeping me physically smaller and physically weaker.
Mad, isn't it? But also not exercising from, it's a Bryony Gordon thing, but like exercising from a pace of self-loathing, which is what I did for years and years and years in the gym. If I keep doing this, I'm going to be smaller. I'm going to be smaller. And it's just like...
Because it feels like punishment.
I know.
As well.
Yeah, and then of course it's a horrible experience.
Even bodybuilding athletes who have like 6 to 8 pack abs, right? It does not look like that the year round. Like, that was the other thing where I just felt like I'd been lied to my entire life, where I was like, oh, so your abs don't look like that the entire time, because you then get into even nerdier talk about when you're in off season and when you're training. So you're basically given this version of something that doesn't really exist. And even then, to maintain it would require a way of eating so restrictively and training in such a way that just, I mean, I wouldn't really want to do, I don't want to do that.
No,
and I think I need to be honest with myself that I don't want to do that.
Because you've got other stuff to do.
Because there are other things that I think are more important than 6-pack abs for me. And
because
that's
good.
Because
it would have to involve using so much of your headspace. Like, if it's a pie chart, it would have to be.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's mad, isn't it? And we sit here as hopefully two like educated, intelligent women, and yet we're still being conned into this.
Yeah, because I think you're conned into it because people just say, well, why wouldn't you want to? And then so you kind of look at all of these beautiful images of people on TV. And I use that word beautiful and I'm just thinking, but who said that they were beautiful? And it's like the whole Wizard of Oz curtain, right? Where you kind of like realize that
someone's told you.
I know, someone's told you, but okay, so why does their opinion seem to matter more than your own opinion of yourself? Yeah. And I don't know why it does. The biggest eye-opener for me was actually doing a powerlifting competition, because I decided to switch into competitive weightlifting last August. And when you go to a competition, you see the broadest spectrum of women there. And I think that to me was sobering, because you realise that strength doesn't have a particular weight category or a body size or abs or whatever the hell it might be.
No, like, it doesn't look like what you think it is.
Yeah, you would see these women walking down the street and you would have, even my teammates, you'd see them walking down the street and you'd have no idea.
But those girls can...
Exactly, yeah. And so that to me is just, you know, if I'm being honest with you, Clemmie, it's a thing I have struggled most with in the last 6 months in that there are loved ones that I have that are older, you know, a lot older, and they're proud of what I do, but they just don't understand it. And when I spoke to my weightlifting team and my trainer and stuff about it, thinking that this was just me, actually it's remarkably common. It happens to men as well as women. You're given a lot of unsolicited advice.
Do you think that's partly because of the sport isn't given the, isn't, I don't know.
I don't think it's actually to do with the sport. I think it's to do with the fact that most people who don't know a whole load about this cannot for the life of them figure out why you would actively not want to be the thinnest that you could possibly be.
Not be aiming to get smaller.
Yeah, that is the absolute bottom line, that you would voluntarily choose as a woman to bulk yourself up to be stronger. And that is, even though I think that there is something about the way that that logic has been hardwired into so many of us that they just cannot wrap their brains around it.
There's obviously weight categories. Is that triggering for you, having to fit into a box, or is it actually the opposite and it's kind of really like seeing your weight, because that's why I asked you if you weigh yourself, which normally in intuitive eating kind of recovery, you move away from scales, but you need to know what you weigh to know what category you're in.
Yeah. So it's interesting you say this. When I first figured out the weight category thing, I was really worried about it because I just thought I don't normally really weigh myself anyway, and I don't like the idea of knowing that I need to get into a category. Yeah. And some people do get into a real tiz about it. And I for sure did, I would say, for the first couple of months of when I was training. Then what I realized was when you look into, let's say, the records that are held, right, for each person who fits in whatever weight category, the two that I could fit into are either 60 or 67 and a half. Like, that's the jump. There is no way in hell I can be competitive enough to win that category, because they're very competitive. Women tend to occupy those two categories the most. So if I'm not going in it to win the actual category, there's no point me just completely, you know, I guess, or seeing it as being triggering, because even if I get into 60, I'm not going to win 60.
So it's not going to, again, unlock anything magical for you.
So I think what I would like to do is I would like to, maybe for my next competition, because I've been competing in 67 and a half, and I usually rest around 62 kilograms. So actually,
you're in a bit of a no-man's
land. I'm kind of in. So either I need to decide to go up to 67 because I can lift more, which I don't really want to do, or I go down to 60, or I just kind of bumble along at the weight that I'm at and then lift and see, see what's going to happen. And I think the way that I'm approaching it at the moment is I think I'm just going to do that. And until I get to a place where I can be competitive, I think that my weight, and definitely it's something that my trainer and other people will advise, is for maybe your first year for sure, or second year, like, don't even think about the weight categories. No. Just like go in there to compete and have fun and look at your own personal bests and see if you can exceed them or not.
Quick ad break to let you know about our sponsors M&S and their Per Una range, which I describe as effortless and feminine. Not exactly words I'd use to describe myself, but a girl can dream. Jokes aside, the fabrics and finishing details are gorgeous, pretty, and super easy to wear too.
So I always like to just take a quick interlude, because it's lovely to talk to you, just me and you, but I always like to ask the people of Instagram. I asked people how strong they were. And interestingly, my observation is that people spoke in these huge kind of contradictions. So either they felt 9 physically strong and 3 emotionally, or the other way around. So they felt like they were really mentally strong, but terrible physically. And I think that's quite interesting that, we were living in these two extremes. I asked them what makes them feel strong. And usually when I ask these kind of questions, I get lots of the same answer, and I got none of the same answer this time, which was really interesting. So it's very divisive. So their answers were, or some of them were, seeing how far I've come, being financially independent, lifting weights, feeling calm, CrossFit, giving birth, knowing all that I've overcome, my brain, spinach, I like that, literal, exercise and sleep, and being loved. And I thought that's such a kind of amazing collection of
answers. I love that, yeah.
Yeah, being loved, I thought was a good answer. Yeah. And then I asked people what they do when they're not feeling strong. And actually, there was loads and loads of the same answers. Most of them were talking about retreating, hiding away, withdrawing was very common. A lot of emotional eating, which is maybe not surprising then that we're finding ourselves moving on to that as a conversation. And then speaking the truth. But yeah, it's strength and emotional eating is interesting. Oh yeah, there was people asking me what I felt about being strong for others and the impact that has, which I thought there's a whole load of conversation about that. And this is a bit of a tangent, but that thing that if you appear strong and capable, that then in some ways you're doing yourself out of something, in that I find often people don't come forward to be supportive of me because they look at me and see that I'm capable. Can you relate to that?
I mean, I would say that I have specific people that I go to, and that is a lesson that I have learned. I am very bad at asking for help and for receiving support from people, because I just want to be seen as being capable and not struggling. And what I've learned is that that's okay sometimes, as in I don't really think that I am the type of person that could open myself up to tons and tons of people. But I know in my head who my 2 to 3 people are.
Who your allies.
And those are the people where even if I really, really don't want to, I've kind of made a promise to them that – even if it's just one of them, that I will kind of say something and I'll ask for help and so on.
And you've able to have the language where you...
Yeah, because they will not respond in a way that I will either find triggering or unhelpful, or they'll just let me talk maybe a little bit. And I feel that having, because we have this conversation, right, especially around mental health about, you know, you just need to talk to people and so on and open up. And I feel that that's fine, but there are so many layers within that where it doesn't work for people. And actually, there are some people that I have said stuff to where I've just regretted it because I've either felt worse or they just haven't really know, they didn't know what the right thing was to say.
Yeah.
And you can't, and that's kind of actually normal. That's pretty normal. So I think having an idea of who you can open up to is really important, but you have to know who those people are.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I'm a massive fan of trying to learn from things that have really not worked for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that with withdrawing from people, it is something that I do. It is a protective mechanism. And before, what I would do was I would see that I was withdrawing and then just, you know, go, oh, no, no, I need to make plans with someone. I need to do this. I need to do that because I shouldn't be withdrawing.
Kick yourself out of it.
Yeah, which sometimes that might have been the right thing to do, but actually majority of times it really wasn't. And so what I've just done is when I am in withdrawal mode, that's okay and
accept
that's fine
it.
And that's, you know, I'm in a protected place, but maybe I'll just do certain things. So for example, that's why I really like weightlifting, because I can do it and I don't have to really talk to anyone, but I'm actually just in my own little world and I've maybe like got myself some nice food and I'm watching TV or whatever it might be for every individual person, where you can withdraw but you're still kind of actively participating in your own life that just doesn't necessarily involve other people.
Because actually it's okay to be in a reflective or a quiet state of mind and not fighting that in ourselves. That it's interesting. But I also read a quote from you that you said nobody is born with inner strength, and that actually really like made me goosebumpy. And no one chooses to have to be strong, you know. It's like I don't want to be put in life situations where I'm choosing to be strong. It's something that is forced upon you, so it's a weird thing to be congratulated for sometimes, isn't it?
I think
it comes from a nice place, you know what I mean? It's like weird contradiction.
Yes, I know exactly what you mean. It comes from a very well-meaning place, but at the same time, someone's just congratulating you on your reality.
Yeah, exactly.
And okay, there are, I guess, if I'm, you know, kind of thinking it through, there could have been an alternative reality where when you were faced with various choices around how to process and handle certain things, maybe you made a different, slightly more self-destructive choice. Mm-hmm. Like, I get that. So you're being congratulated on the fact that you made the better choice. But nonetheless, you are still only able to operate within your own reality. It's like when people say to me, oh God, you know, they're like telling me about a tough time that they're going through and they're like, oh, you know, but it's nothing like what you've been through. And but it's like, that's my reality,
friend.
Yeah,
and also we're not on a scale.
Yeah.
I'm not competing against
you.
Yeah,
it's exactly. This is something that I put in the book and in A Search for Silence, which is, I know that we like to do this, but there's just no exchange rate to someone else's misery compared to your own. Like, there just isn't. And how I have dealt with things also, yes, okay, it's decisions that I've made, but it absolutely is also a reflection of my support system and my network around me. And I know that I am privileged and I am lucky, for example, that I have a good family around me who have not behaved in the way that, let's say, some other people's families in a similar situation to me have behaved. I'm trying to create a sort of, I guess, a set of things that help me to cope with life when it gets tough.
Yes.
And when things are great, then it's just this amazing add-on.
Yes, it's so interesting, isn't it? Again, on a kind of intuitive eating journey, I can be feeling really great and like, I've nailed this. And then actually it's what happens, you know, I now know my thing that if I get tired or I feel stressed, that the first thing I do is start criticizing my body. And once you know that about yourself, at least you can pull yourself out, and then I can take myself to the gym, and then it kind of unfurls that whole thing.
I mean, do you find that if you take a step back, like, are you forgiving with yourself about the fact that that's okay, like it's a step back because there's a step forward?
Now again, then that's the next step to go, this is what happened. And especially as women, we are cyclical, we have a lot of hormones going on, that things do kind of come in ebbs and flows, don't they?
Yeah, they absolutely do. And also, there's none of this is a fixed point. Like, all of this is learning, and all of this
you're
is
never gonna be
subject to change. And and that's totally, totally fine. And I think that learning how to process failure and the days when things don't go the way that you want them to, which is absolutely something that happens in weightlifting, makes me a lot better, or gives me experience really to be able to cope when that actually does happen, let's say in my professional life.
Yeah. And be able to get your head back in that space and not, not let it railroad into anything more.
Yeah, because with my last competition, I didn't do as well as I wanted to because a number of reasons. I just, mentally, things have been really tough. I hadn't had much time to train. And I was on the phone to my mum going, I didn't do as well as I thought I would. And my mum just said, look, you're not really used to too much failure, like in your work life. And she said, so actually, this is kind of a good thing. She said, so, you know, okay, there were certain things within your control and not within your control. But actually, this is actually a good thing to learn from. Mm. And I just remember thinking, oh,
and did you take that on board?
You wise woman. Yes, I actually did. It was like, it was a lightning bolt moment because I just thought, you know what, like my career may have been a lot of graft, but in the end I have usually gotten what I wanted. That with weightlifting, it's such a new unknown thing for me. There's still so much I'm still figuring out,
and it is disconcerting when you can't kind of fight your way to getting what you want.
I know.
I also asked the people of the internet, well, I went full geeky powerlifting and asked people what their favourite lifts were and asked people to give me their numbers, which people were very keen to do. I loved it.
People are always keen to do.
Yeah, but it's kind of good in the conversations I have online. I don't know, it's funny, women don't allow themselves to kind of shout from the rooftops very much. And again, it's tangible, isn't it? But we've got a lot of fans who are deadlifts, and also got a lot of badass women who are lifting a lot. And then I asked them if they had anything else specific about lifting they wanted to say. And someone said that they'd read that it takes 1,000 lifts to be perfect at it. I thought, wow, that is a lot, first of all. But also, that's quite an interesting analogy, isn't it? There aren't quick gains. And I think in this culture that we live in now, like, you do want, you, I could order something now and it'd be there tomorrow. Like, we want things fast. And because, as you say, you've got stuck on 85 and then you've got to incrementally get up to 100, it's quite a good life lesson.
Yeah, definitely. But also, you, I mean, I don't know about the 1,000 lifts thing. No, that's the first time I've ever
heard
that.
I've got there.
It's nice as an affirmation somewhere on a lovely little.
I used to ride when I was growing up and they used to say, oh, you have to have 100 falls before you like any good at riding. I definitely didn't fall off 100 times.
And it's like brushing your hair 100 times. It's like, I will be bald by the end of
it. My hair would be greasy. And then someone has asked me, is it safe for petite women to do? And I'm like, what? Yes, it's safe for anyone to do.
It is hugely cardiovascular. If you are being taught by someone who can show you how to do it properly, why would it not be
safe?
And
it's all scaled.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's also, the thing is, if you're incrementally adding on weight, it's not like you're lifting a weight that you have no idea whether or not you can lift.
No,
and I feel like that's where all these injury videos, for example, come from, usually men, where they basically, like, you know, add like tons of weight on that they have not been working towards, haven't been doing any exercises to support other areas of their back and all of that kind of stuff. And that's how it happens. But I would just say that over time, I have continuously been tweaking my technique and my form. And I'm still nowhere near, for example, with my bench, which is horrendous. I'm nowhere near there, but like, it takes time. Like, it's constantly course correcting it, which definitely is an analogy for life.
And just those small, you know, someone tells you one new thing, like a new analogy to how to lift, and you're like, oh my God.
Yeah, mind blown.
It's just like shifted everything.
Yep.
But yeah, and then someone has put in capital letters, get advice from an expert. And I think I want to pull that back to mental health because I'm really keen to do it. But yes, it's good to find your support network, but definitely finding a place for an expert to help you with your mind as well as your with your body is such a good use of your time. People feel like therapy is such a luxury, but in the same way that you should think nothing of getting a personal trainer, you should feel the same about your head as well.
Yeah, I mean,
do you see a therapist?
I do. I'm not seeing her at the moment, but I am going to start seeing her again. So I see her sort of for chunks.
Me too.
At a time.
And then I'm always like, my therapist is called Jill. I'm like, I must see Jill. And actually, sometimes by thinking that I must see Jill, is able to put me back into the right headspace.
Yes, yeah, which, yeah, I know. But yeah, my lady is Isabel, but yeah, I really need to see Isabel. Me telling myself that I need to see Isabel hasn't fixed it, yeah, unfortunately. No.
But that's, again, it's maintenance, isn't it? Like that same thing that sometimes, it's just about a bit of MOT for yourself.
I think that getting a PT is a huge thing for a lot of, it was a huge thing for me to do, and I felt like it was a waste of money. And then what I did was I wrote down where my money goes,
yeah, and how you could find
the and how I could find maybe the money to do that. Mm-hmm. And I think that for some people, it still might not be within reach. And
no,
there are PTs.
Course.
There are PTs who do, let's say you can, if you manage to get a mate to go along with you, or they split the cost of the session, so that it ends up being a lot cheaper. And that can work out. But I think that with a therapist, for sure, I mean, for me, this is my personal measure of it, which I'm not just saying it's for anyone else, but my measure is, if I can afford to go on holiday, then I can afford a therapist. When I first started seeing her, I saw her every fortnight.
Yeah, that's exactly
I didn't
right.
see her every
so
week.
So she knows, she understands like the structures of my family. And
Yeah, exactly. But I think that, yes, this is all relative, but I would just say that if you do have the money and can move stuff around from like different areas of your life. For me, my therapist changed my life.
Yes.
I mean, in the same way that I would say weightlifting has done, because she has just been able to make me look at my life in a way that I'm really sorry, but friends and family just cannot
for
you.
No, because they can't be objective.
Yeah, and that I can't do for myself.
No, because you just need someone to sit back and it is exactly that analogy. Your therapist can say one tiny thing to make you see something different and you're like, what?
Yeah.
You've just unlocked all these truths that I've told myself that aren't truths. Because again, with the holiday thing, maybe you're trying to, obviously holidays are just wonderful, but you're possibly trying to escape something. Or again, not because I'm now sober, but I've previously thought nothing of spending quite a lot of money on going out.
You know, my God.
You can always find the money.
The amount of money. I just remember when I sort of went into this period of not drinking for a couple of months and the bill would arrive and I was like, I felt like they'd left something off
you know, £14.
The receipt?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, just pay for
I
some
know.
Food.
Yeah, that still shocks me. Yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah, I know that we're coming from a position of privilege, but you can't put a price on self-care. And that self-care for me is your mind and your body. And actually, there's a lot of time when I was really investing in my mind and wasn't looking after my body. But to feel at my happiest, I need to be looking after them both.
Yeah, absolutely.
So three things before the end. One, where can people find you? What are your social handles? And what would you like to shout about? Have you got any? Well, I know what you've got. But
So my social handles are at Purnabelle on Instagram and Twitter. I've also started a little platform that's along the lines of strength, whatever that means to you. It doesn't have to be weightlifting. It could be anything, called at See My Strong, which is just about visibility of different types of fitness and different women. And at the moment, I am just doing workshops, which is on at Fix My Life Workshop, which are workshops around mental well-being.
Ah, and you've got books.
Oh, yeah. And I've got two books.
Which you might like to sell a couple
of books. The first is called Chase the Rainbow and the second is called In Search of Silence.
And then I like to ask people, going back to the title of the podcast, which is honestly, if you could have an honest conversation with one person, who would it be and what would you say? It could be a troll, a celebrity, a friend, a younger version of yourself.
If I could have an honest conversation, it would be with myself, but in my 20s, when I was making really bad choices around men, I think, and going out. And I think I really struggled with my self-esteem. And I feel like if I was just maybe a bit more introspective around how all of these things were connected, I may not have dated so many losers.
But you know what? Part of me thinks, weren't we meant to date?
You have to.
Yeah, I know. You have to go for all of those people to know what the good
true.
One.
Yeah, but I think she could have done with a bit of an honest chat.
Yeah, but once you started talking to your 20-year-old self, then maybe it would all fall out.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you feel like you're grown up at 20 and you're basically, as per the age, you've just come out of being a teenager.
Yeah, exactly.
You know nothing.
Yeah.
Sorry to any 20-year-old listening. And then I have actually been quite honest this episode, but I feel like maybe I've not been as honest as you. So I'd like to add a bit of honesty, and I'll be honest, I like granulated coffee. I'm going to out that because I like posh coffee. Of course I do. But day to day, I'm really happy with an instant. And I was going to ask you how you feel, but your noise made it quite clear.
It tastes like a burnt tyre. My parents are obsessed with it. They love granulated coffee.
Do you know
coffee.
What? All the older generation do. Yeah. I feel like I really belong with them. I can always go to their house. I just find it a less extreme version of coffee.
I mean, that's because it has no taste. No, sorry, it does have a taste. Burnt tyre.
Like fakeness.
Yeah.
Anyway, I've been Clemmie Telford and this excellent woman has been born about. And what a funny way to end with instant coffee. But, you know, there's been more serious stuff along the way, so that's fine. This has been Honestly Podcast. Thank you for listening. Please rate, review, subscribe and tell your mates all about it. Thank you very much. And that's it. Time to say goodbye with one final shout out to our podcast sponsors, Marks & Spencer's. Thank you to this brilliant brand for giving me the opportunity to do what I love. If you found this week's episode interesting, which I hope you did, I'd love to know your thoughts. So please do give me a rating or review, and even better, hit the subscribe button. That way you'll get each week's episode delivered straight to you. Oh, and one final thought. I'm always looking for inspiration for new subjects. So if you've got any topics that you'd like me to cover that I haven't done already, please do send your suggestions my way. You can either leave a comment below on iTunes or hop over to Instagram and send me a DM, and I'd love to hear from you. Thanks very much.